Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The following is a CA original.
Pouncer, the Palm Squad. Pre- and post-game parties on Beale Street. It's all part of the Memphis Tigers basketball game day experience. This is the Tiger Basketball Podcast.
What's happening, Tiger basketball fans? We are back for another edition of the Tiger Basketball Podcast. I'm Mark Giannato, columnist for the Commercial Appeal. I'm joined, as always, by Jason Munns, our Tiger basketball beat writer. And Jason, we're going streaking this week.
We're on a roll, baby.
We last recorded a podcast 7 days ago. And in those 7 days, Memphis has reeled off three straight wins, probably its three best wins of the year when you take into account how they looked, how they played. Or certainly two of the three are their best, are their two best wins of the year. But they beat Memphis, beats Wichita State at FedEx Forum on January 21st. Then over the weekend, comes back on Sunday, wins at ECU convincingly. And then last night on Tuesday, we're recording this on Wednesday, they beat SMU at home, hold them off in the second half, a very entertaining game, 76-72. So suddenly the Tigers are on a three-game winning streak. They're 9-5. They're alone in second place in the AAC standings. They're now top 60 in KenPom again at number 59. They're top 70 in the net. They've moved up to 68. They've in a matter of 7 days, Jason, have transformed the narrative around this season. And, you know, I'm not going to say they're bubble NCAA tournament bubble mix, but they're certainly working their way towards putting themselves back in the conversation. And it's pretty remarkable how much the discussion has changed in just a week span.
Let me ask you this, as this hit me as you were going there, three wins in a row, two of them against top 80 KenPom teams. Is this the best three-game stretch of the Penny Hardaway era?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I still think the high point is it's the winning streak last year when they beat Tennessee to cap it off. Beating Wichita State and beating SMU, those are both teams you're competing with at the top of the league, and you did it in both ways were pretty impressive. Against Wichita State, where you just overwhelm them with a fantastic second half, you overwhelm a team that had been playing well with a fantastic second half. That was really impressive. And then the SMU game where you dig yourself out of a 13-point deficit in the first half, and then you win this back-and-forth game where SMU, you know, you answered every SMU charge. That was also – so I guess you could argue it in that regard, but I still think the high points at this point of the Penny Hardaway era remains that long winning streak last year, especially when you thought Wiseman was going to come back. You know, remember they beat Tennessee, and they beat Tennessee on the road, at the time a ranked Tennessee team on the road. And like at that moment in time, if you told me that team was going to the Final Four, I would have been like, I could see it. You know, like that's how good we felt about where they were. And that's, you know, obviously that last season kind of got derailed a bit as it went on, starting with Wiseman leaving. But going back to what's going on right now, I figured let's do it like this, Jason. What have been in your mind, and we'll go back and forth here. What are the biggest factors in what's changed for the Tigers over the last three games? And again, the thing I've found most impressive is they've done it three different ways, while also maintaining a certain sense of continuity with what they're doing. You know, like what they're doing feels sustainable for the most part. I'm curious if we could go through like the top five or seven factors or something, like, and it could be a player, it could be a part of the game, a facet of the game, it could be a coaching decision, whatever. What would you say are the biggest factors in what's changed about this Memphis basketball team these past three games? So you give me
the first one. So you want to go tit for tat?
Yeah, you give me one and I'll give you another one.
All right, let's go with I'll start with three-point shooting. What were they, 10 of – here, let me pull up the stats real quick. They were 10 of 21 last night from three against Wichita State. They were 11 of 18. I think they were like 11 of 20 or 11 of 21. 11 of
25 against ECU.
Yeah, so 30
– They've hit double-digit threes in all three games. Is that right?
Yeah, 32 three-pointers in the last three games. I mean, that's an obvious choice, but that is so drastically different and drastically improved from what had gone on the previous 10 games or 11 games before that. That's an easy answer.
No, and Landers is really shooting the ball well now. We're starting to see that. You know, the shooter Penny talked about in the offseason, he's really showing up now. It's such a smooth, quick release he's got. And these last three games, when the ball leaves his hand, every shot hasn't gone in, but you felt like it's going to go in when he lets go of the ball. DJ has shot the ball increasingly well. Even Boogie isn't, if you look at his percentage, isn't shooting the ball poorly at all. And then, you know, in the SMU game, DeAndre Williams hits two huge threes in the SMU game. So and Lester's shooting the ball better. It feels like he's taking better, they're getting better 3-point shots. I said, you know, that's what's really stood out. They're getting rhythm 3-point shots more often. It's not as many forced 3-pointers or 3-pointers where they're off the dribble. It's coming within the flow of the offense from like driving kicks and things like that more often.
Yeah, they got six guys now who are shooting 35% or better from three.
Okay, so I think 3-point shooting is a good one. I think for me a huge factor is Musa Cisse. I think we've seen these last three games, we've seen the five-star recruit. He's had dominating stretches down low. He's rebounding. He's had in these three games, he's got two double doubles and a 15.9 rebound game against DCU. And he's blocking shots. He had four blocks last night against SMU. I mean, I thought, you know, that they go down 13 points in the first half against SMU there. And it was, I thought, Musa's energy and activity that got Memphis out of its malaise. Like Penny went to a zone, which was a tweak that worked for a while there. It threw off SMU because SMU was doing a nice job dealing with the traps that Penny had used really well against Wichita and ECU, trapping like pick and rolls and all that, the aggressive man-to-man. SMU was doing a good job moving the ball and getting open looks off of that. That's why they were getting some of those open threes. And Penny went zone and it worked, but also Musa just, he had a couple blocks, had a couple dunks. And we've seen they're using him in a different way. They're using him. It's a lot more. He's getting the ball moving towards the basket as he's close to the basket. Like he's not getting the ball outside of the paint very often. And he's not getting it with his back to the basket as often. They're putting him in better positions to take advantage of what he's really good at right now, which is he's long, he's athletic, he's got decent hands, you know, he can, and he's finishing at the rim, and it's added and his activity defensively and as a rebounder, it's added another dimension to the team. And I think it's been a huge, he's been a huge boost. And frankly, honestly, Malcolm Dandridge has played better during this stretch too, these three games. They're just getting a lot more from that five position. But it starts with Musa. And obviously down the stretch in the SMU game last night, Penny made the decision not to play Musa the last 9 minutes. And he explained it as he was worried about Musa's pick and roll coverage against SMU, and Penny had, you know, he had in mind the USF game where the USF guard, even though Memphis won that game, that USF guard, I forget his name, kind of torched him in the pick and roll in the second half, and Penny wanted to avoid that, and it worked out. I mean, I believe over the last 5 minutes, SMU was 2 of 10 from the floor. So, and I know some of that was, you know, miss some bunny. You know, they did miss, you know, Kendrick Davis, he missed an easy layup that comes to mind in the last minute where you might have wanted Musa as a rim protector. But all in all, really encouraging stretch for Musa. And, you know, obviously he's still got room for improvement. You know, he can be a better defender in the pick and roll. His touch in terms of his offensive game is still – you know, at this point, he's a liability doing anything but dunking the ball for the most part. But even just that is when he's doing that well and he's rebounding the ball and he's blocking shots, he's a really valuable piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, one quick thought on Musa. One play that stood out to me last night was during that stretch where Memphis went like on a 17-2 run in the first half. He had a really heads-up play. Kendrick Davis, it's like 5.5 minutes left. Memphis is down 11. Kendrick Davis is driving. He goes to do almost like a teardrop alley-oop type thing. And Musa, instead of going for the block, he backs off and like catches the ball as it's sort of like he comes up with a big steal. And I thought it showed that his instincts are improving as well.
It's nice to see him getting better. He's clearly gotten better as the year's gone on. And that's, you know, that reflects well on him. It reflects well on the staff. It reflects well on the program. And frankly, it's reflecting well on the court. Like it's giving, he's been a huge part of this winning streak.
So I picked an easy one for my first one as some, you know, a big reason why things are better. And so I said a 3-point shooting. I could do the same thing and say Alex Lomax, but I'll save that one. And I'll say that something that's stood out in these last three games is just how balanced they've been. They're getting significant contributions, even though guys aren't scoring, you know, there's not one or two or three guys who are scoring 15 to 20 points a game. You're getting really valuable contributions. You mentioned the DeAndre Williams 3-pointers. He came into the game with 2 all season. He hit 2 huge 3-pointers last night against SMU. Boogie Ellis, even though he didn't have a bunch, like he didn't have many steals or anything last night, he was disruptive. He was being disruptive on defense. Damian Baugh has shot the ball better these last three games than maybe he ever has. And I'll say, like, Landers Nolly in the first 11 games of the season, he was kind of one-dimensional. He wasn't giving you a ton on defense. He wasn't being a distributor necessarily. He's been doing those things better. And you brought up Malcolm Dandridge. And so it's just been a much more – the cohesion is better. The chemistry is better. Roles are becoming more defined. And you're getting contributions like Lester Quinones is doing what glue guys do. And so it's just been a much more – team friendly vibe these last three games.
Well, since you want to claim, you've already laid claim to Lomax, I'm going to give you him next. I'm going to point to, it's not something that's changed. It's actually the one constant for this team, but the defense, they're just playing fantastic defense. I mean, over these last three games, you had three different defenders primarily shut down three of the top five scorers in the AAC. Against Wichita State, Lester Quinones completely shut down Tyson Etienne, who entered that game as the league's leading scorer, but left it not as the league's leading scorer. Then against ECU, you had DeAndre Williams really just take Jaden Gardner of ECU out of the game. And then against SMU last night, it's Lomax taking out Kendrick Davis, the leading scorer for SMU. I haven't gone back and look at it. Jason, look up what Etienne shot from the field.
One of 12? Yeah, 1 of 12 from the field, 0 for 5 from 3.
And then last night, Davis was 4 of 14. And against and Gardner was 4 of 12. So they held those three guys to 9 of 38 shooting the last three games.
What is that, under 25%?
Way under. Under 25%. Let's see exactly what it is. If I can get my calculator open.
I don't do numbers. Sorry. We need help.
23.7% from the field.
I was close. I'll take it.
Three of the top five scorers in the AAC. So the defense has just been – I mean, it's they're elite again. They're one of the best defensive teams in the country yet again under Penny Hardaway. And it's – they're fourth in the country in defensive efficiency now. And it's just something that – you know, it gives you some margin for error offensively. Like, the offense has been better, but it's still not, you know, some juggernaut offense. It's just now we've said all along, because of this defense, all you needed to do was have like a decent offense and you can be a good team. And what we've seen is they've gone from bad to decent offensively with stretches of good offense. And that's, you know, when you play defense the way this program does, that's all you need offensively. It's an interesting dynamic here at how, you know, it's a credit to Penny, frankly, that no matter what, he's always gotten these guys to play defense. And you know, you saw last night, you know, like Penny had answers for what SMU was doing to them defensively. Yes, SMU got over 70 points, but they were also 10 points below their average. And you, like I said, they went 2 of 10 over the last 5 minutes of the game. You stopped them when it mattered, and you stopped their best player. So it's just and we'll see, you know, it's why, you know, they play SMU again tomorrow night. You know, like, it's tough to beat a team two games in a row, but they have a good shot because, you know, I just, you know, that defense travels, you know, that defense is something they've always been able to call upon. And it's something that now that they're playing better offensively, I think we're going to notice it even more. We're going to notice them, you know, it's going to be even more noticeable how suffocating they can be defensively, Memphis. So, you know, like I said, it's become a calling card of Penny's program. And when they're winning, it stands out even more in my mind that they're so good defensively.
Here's a nugget I dug up late night as I was working on my premium follow-up story for this morning over at commercialappeal.com. Kendrick Davis, between his freshman year at TCU and the last year and a half almost at SMU, he's taken care of the ball. He's been a very, very good point guard. He has never turned the ball over in 74 career games. He had never turned the ball over more than five times in a single game. Last night, Alex Lomax, Damian Ball, and Lester Quinones got him to turn the ball over six times in a regulation game. That's pretty impressive. You know what I mean? Like that's just further proof positive that this defense is for real.
They're playing more the past few games they've played. They mix in zone every now and then. Like I feel like you can just sense it's just a hard defense to prepare for, even because they're so long. You know, they can play these lineups like they did at the end of the SMU game where they can switch everything. They're trapping, they're aggressive, they're forcing turnovers. And then, you know, we've seen over the last couple games, for a few possessions, they can just mix in some zone to throw you off balance.
Right,
and
right.
So it's an asset. And if you wish, you know, I don't know if you want to wish they started playing better offensively sooner. I obviously you do, but you don't want to be, but I don't want to come off as ungrateful for what we've seen the last three games, because it's been a lot of fun to watch them click. Okay. So are you going to pick Lomax now as our fifth reason why this is, we got to do something on him. It feels like he's the heartbeat of this team, for better or for worse.
It's irrefutable, but at this point, that as Alex Lomax goes, so go the Tigers. You know, I think he's turned a corner. We might not be ready yet to say that Memphis has turned a corner, mm-hmm. but Alex Lomax has certainly turned a corner.
He still has those moments. Like he started last night's game poorly. Against SMU, you had a bad double dribble there late, turnover. But yeah, no, he's playing better, that's for sure. And there's stretches where he looks good. This team looks good. He played well for long stretches last night. In between kind of the rocky finish and the rocky start, there was a real solid middle there where he, you know. His tenaciousness as a defender, his hustle, and then just his, you know, when he's playing well, he is a good distributor. He is a point guard, and they don't have anyone else on the roster who has the point guard instincts that he does. It's just that sometimes, you know, his effectiveness can be limited, unfortunately. His decision making can vacillate, you know, it's good. It's really good in spurts, and it can be really bad in spurts.
You could make the case that he made the play of the game against SMU. And I wrote about that in my story about his breakdown of that play, with under 2 minutes to go. Kendrick Davis tries to throw up a sort of last
103 left in the game.
Yeah.
1 minute, 3 seconds left.
Yeah. He tries to throw up a three pointer that would have tied the game at 73.
There was a jump ball that I don't know if it was Lomax or someone they called a jump ball when it really should have been
a block,
SMU guy. I think it was Davis rose up for a shot and someone got their hand on it. I think it might've been Lomax too. And they called a jump ball, and it was SMU's ball. And they came out of a timeout, and yet Kendrick Davis had the ball at the end of the shot clock.
Yeah, well, he beats Alex off the dribble, but rather than give up on the play and allow Kendrick Davis an open look at a three, he kind of swats from behind, like he's legitimately behind Kendrick Davis, but he swats over the top of him. And it causes Kendrick Davis to like double clutch, to double pump. And that split second. And the most impressive thing to me is that if you believe what Alex Lomax was saying after the game, is that he kind of was thinking along those lines in the moment, that if he could force any sort of hesitation on that shot, I mean, A, you want to block it. That's goal number one. But even if you don't, if you could force some sort of split second hesitation, it might mean the difference in the game. And, you know, who's to say he wasn't actually aware of that?
Can we talk about that? So it was a controversial reversal. So that shot goes in. Kendrick Davis hits the shot, and they initially called a three. And it was 73-7. DeAndre Williams had just hit a big three, the game, or lead change three. Go ahead three. And then Davis, for we counted it last night, 65 seconds was how long that review took, which isn't very long for a review. But during those 65 seconds, it looked like it was a tie game, 73-73. And they were looking at the replay of the play. And what I found interesting, Jason, I didn't realize this in the moment because we were in the arena, but apparently people watching on TV, they never showed an angle on TV that looked like it should be reversed and not count. But correct me if I'm wrong here. When we in the arena on the Jumbotron, there appeared to be a slow-mo replay where it was a very close call, even in slow-mo. But in this very slow-mo replay, it looks like the red light on the backboard has lit up and the ball is still – it's being released, but it still looks like it's on Kendrick Davis's fingertips. Would you say that is an accurate depiction of what we saw in the arena? Because apparently on TV they didn't –
It is.
I don't think people got the same view we did on TV.
Right. So I rewatched the replay when I got home. I recorded it. So I rewatched it. And the clock that they were showing in the bottom corner of the screen as they were, you know, going through the replay or whatever on TV was not the same. It was not the shot clock. You could barely see the actual in arena shot clock in the top left hand corner of the screen. And there was a difference. Like the clock that TV was using, yeah, there was a little bit of time left. He got it off in time on that clock. But as you're looking at the actual in-arena shot clock, it had hit zero, as you said, with Davis's fingertips still on the ball.
And how quick and the review like, was told me, like, they saw a view that was pretty definitive because it was only 65 seconds.
Yeah, because the commentary crew, one of them even said, oh, he got it off in plenty of time. But again, I think they were looking at like their own unofficial clock maybe and not the actual official clock.
Well, it was obviously a big play in the game. But, you know, it was big for Memphis to, you know, and for Lomax, for all these guys to pull out, you know, they all – four of their five losses this year had been by 7 points or less. They had not done well in these games where it comes down to the last few minutes. And the SMU game, this three-game winning streak has gotten progressively more encouraging because, you know, you had the kind of the breakthrough second half against Wichita State, but it was only the first time they'd done it. So, you were happy, but you needed – to see more evidence. Then against ECU, they have the fantastic first half where they just snuff out a shorthanded, weaker opponent just like they're supposed to, which again was encouraging, but ultimately it was against a, you know, undermanned and ECU team that even at full strength you would hope you beat. But then last night against SMU to really kind of to win a back and forth game against a good, you know, against according to the metrics, the best team they've played this year. It's gotten progressively more encouraging. I'm not sure it's, you know, I'm ready to, you know, declare they've certainly changed their season, turned their season around, but they still got some work to do, to become, like I said, to be back in the bubble conversation. So my last one, Jason, my last factor in why this is why they've been able to turn things around. I'm going to put Penny Hardaway on this list. I think he's, you know, as much scrutiny as he got during the first 11 games, during those rocky first 11 games, as you scrutinize these last three, you can't help but notice that the changes he'd put in place, the things he's doing differently are working. He seems to once again kind of have his hand on the steering wheel and really doing a nice job with different things. You've seen him, you know, whether it's with his rotations have been more, concise and there's more rhythm to what he's doing. You mentioned earlier, Jason, guys are starting to figure out what their roles are. And I think that's Penny's done a nice job of putting these guys in more consistent positions on the court and more consistent rotations on the court. And then, you know, we already mentioned some of his defensive tweaks he's made with the zone defense, the decision he made. Going to zone in the first half of the SMU game, in addition to Lomax and Cisse, that was a big catalyst during the first half when Memphis climbed out of that 13-point hole. You got to give Penny credit here that he's been able to – this thing looked – I mean, a week ago, this thing looked – it was teetering. You were wondering what they were – I wouldn't say they were bottoming out or anything, but they were directionless. They seemed like they were stuck in neutral as a team, as a program, as a coaching staff. And over these last three games, they've righted that ship, so to speak. And, that's a credit to coaching. I mean, Penny has held it together and these guys are coming together as a unit. And they're showing that progress. They've gotten better. And that's what you ultimately, to me, when you're judging a coach, one of the key factors, in addition to, obviously making the NCAA tournament with a college basketball coach is one litmus test, but you also want the team, you want to be able to say the team looked better at the end of the year than it did at the beginning. And now we're finally seeing this Memphis team looks better than it did. And they're getting better and they're headed in the right direction.
Speaking of direction, now Memphis turns right around 48 hours after this big win. They got to play these guys again on their court this time.
Djankovic still probably? They're probably still not going to have their head coach, right?
I would bet they're not going to have him or the two assistants who missed last night's game because Djankovic tested positive on Monday for COVID-19 or for coronavirus. And the two assistants who did not make the trip because of close contact tracing with Djankovic. So I'd imagine at the very least, you won't have Djankovic on Thursday and possibly not those two other assistants. So can Memphis pull off the sweep?
They can certainly. They play the way they've played the last three games. I see no reason why they can't beat SMU again. It's not like it's going to be some, SMU can be a tough place to play when it's full, but you're not going to have that same raucous atmosphere. Now, at the same time, I think you saw last night, SMU's a pretty good team. Yeah. That team, they got a bunch of veterans, as Alo put it afterwards, like they're going to come back with a vengeance and we got to come back with more. And so, they're probably going to have to play a little better, honestly, than they did on Tuesday at FedEx Forum. So, and then after that, they've got two home games against UCF. So we could come back here a week from now. I'm curious. It's amazing to me how much it's changed over 7 days and how much it could change because of how compact the schedule is right now. 7 days from now, they will have played three more games.
Right.
And will they be on a 6-game winning streak? Will they be 5-1, 4-2, 3-3? How's this going to go? Because I pointed out in my column, as good as this feels, the last time they went on a 3-game conference winning streak, Jason, last year, right around the same time, it was a week later, this same time, it was the first week in February instead of the last week in January. They went on and then lost their next three games. So, if we're coming back here next week after these three games and they're, let's say right now they're 9-5, let's say they're 11-6 or better, 11-6 or 12-5, we could be in business. You know what I mean? Like it could really, things could really start to heat up with this season. So we'll be very interesting to see what the Tigers do. We will have tons of coverage over at commercialappeal.com of all those games. The SMU game on Thursday night, followed by the two games against UCF at FedEx Forum. But till next time, I was Mark. I was joined by Jason. Thank you so much. And enjoy the streak. Feels a lot better than it did a week ago, doesn't it?
It does.
The Tiger Basketball Podcast is a production of the Commercial Appeal.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.